now for something completely different.
Welcome to the Association of the Agriculturalists. I am Andrew Nathanson. Every other week, a special guest and I have an in-depth discussion about a card from the game Agricola. Today's card is the Small-Scale Farmer, an occupation from the revised edition Base Cards B deck, whose ability reads, as long as you live in a house with exactly two rooms, at the start of each round, you get one wood. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Today, we're going to be talking about the Small-Scale Farmer. And joining me to talk about the Small-Scale Farmer is Maddie.
Hey.
Maddie, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing? I'm very glad to be here. Always happy to be talking about cards that make a big country more powerful, especially as it's going to get banned soon. And all these cards are going to be kind of worthless.
Yeah, that's something that we're definitely going to have to talk about. Before we get into that, though, would you like to introduce yourself for our audience?
Yeah, sure. My name is Matthew Robinson. I, in the board game world, have a lovely podcast, mostly run by my best friends at this point, called the Game Brain Podcast. We cover mostly medium and heavy board games, but we cover a wide range as well. But that's mostly where our heart lies. And professionally, I am a screenwriter and I live in Los Angeles, California.
Awesome. Thank you so much for agreeing to be on the Association of the Agriculturalists, the show where we talk about Agricola every other week.
Absolutely.
And yeah, today's card's kind of an interesting one. I would say it's probably somewhere relatively low on the power rankings, except in very specific circumstances, as you alluded to.
Yeah.
But I think the first thing we should do, as we always do, is try to get kind of an overall sense of the power level of this card. So, first of all, I wanted to talk about it. This is a wood gathering card, right? Primarily, considering that's literally all it does.
it's a passive wood trickle.
Yeah. And so I wanted to get a sense of it in terms of like where it falls in relation to other wood gathering occupations. And as always, we're going to be talking about this in the context of the sets that are currently available on BGA.
Yeah.
So that would be the revised edition base game cards, as well as the CD expansion, not notably the C and the D expansions. But the CD expansion, which is different for some reason.
Yeah, exactly. It is super confusing. Console d'origines, I think they call it, all those Latin names.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm always looking. I mean, we all have our obvious first picks that we see. And then beyond that, I'm always looking to pick up wood economy help, because that to me feels like once I get that taken care of, I can calm down and start figuring out other things. But like my main anxiety is always like, how am I getting wood in this game? Because if I don't, I lose.
Yeah, because I mean, wood is like the one resource in the game also that you're never going to be sad that you have like too much.
I've like, never had easily... too much. I've never had a game where I end with 12 wood and I'm like, well, that was stupid.
Yeah, like I've had games where I end with a bunch of clay and I'm like, oh, why did I pick 100%. That up? Like, you know, you get blocked on something that you were planning to spend it on and you just can't spend it. Wood, let's go through real quick all the things you can spend wood on.
Yep.
Obviously rooms.
Yep.
That's usually the first thing people use them for. Typically, you don't want to build too many rooms in wood because wood is so important, but like you can build rooms in wood if you have a lot of wood.
Unless you have rammed clay, in which case you're good to go. Build all your wood rooms.
Definitely true. Fencing, obviously, there's 15 wood there. So you could easily spend like about 10 wood on rooms responsibly. You could spend like 15 on fences, so we're at 25 now. You could spend 8 on stables, so we're at 33. You could spend 11 total on the joinery to get, or 9 total on the joinery to get max value out of it.
Yep, 7 and 2.
So
yeah.
We're at...
And then, I mean, sort of maybe third most important after fences and your rooms are the huge number of miners that have wood costs this set. Huge number.
Yeah, so you can easily get up to needing like 50 to 60 wood in a single game.
Yeah.
And you're going to have like, and those are all like, those aren't even just like you get diminishing returns once you get up there. Like those things are all roughly like equally valuable, you know? That's kind of that's the funny thing is like you never kind of lose efficiency in converting wood into points. It just keeps being a very good source.
Yep.
So yeah, so that is definitely any card that gives you wood is pretty good for that reason. That being said, I think in terms of the cards that give you wood, Small Scale Farmer is pretty low for me. So I have a list here in our show notes of various cards that I thought of, and I'm sure I'm missing some, but just like some various cards that are wood injecting cards that give you either a trickle of wood or immediate wood. And I just wanted to go through them quickly and kind of say, like, all right, do we think this is like better or worse than these?
What's the are you maybe, I often forget the names of the cards, but what is the miner that gives you 2 wood every time you take a wood accumulation?
Oh, that is a wood card.
Wood card. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't, I was just comparing it to other occupations here, but yeah, no, but wood card is also like, wood card's kind of a top tier.
That's a first pick for me if I see it. Yeah. Unless there's big country in that pack. Yeah.
It's a very high pick for me. I don't know if I would go first on it, but it is like, I love the fact that that just lets you bully the wood piles. Yeah. Like you can take a 2 wood pile and still be very happy about it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Just nobody else ever gets wood. But yeah, but these ox are all just things that are going to mostly just give you wood, not necessarily prevent the rest of the table from getting it. So the first one is Wood Collector. This is the card where you play it and you put a wood on the next 5 spaces and you just get those 5 wood.
That's a pretty early grab if possible. It's just, it's easy to play. It depends on your table position as well. If I'm third or fourth, I'm a little less excited about this because I don't think I'm playing it quickly when I want it. If I'm first or second and I don't have other really important early aux to play, then that to me feels like a good early aux.
Yeah, I think Wood Collector is kind of just like a better version of Small Scale Farmer. Mm-hmm. Because I don't expect to get 5 wood out of Small Scale Farmer. I think I expect to get maybe 4. Like, you could get 5 if you play it on the first turn.
Unless
and then just
your
like,
whole strategy is staying 2 for a while, like, because, you know.
Because otherwise you're building too slow and you're going to be behind in the room queue.
Way too slow. And if growth pops early, you're DOA.
Yeah. So it's like occasionally you'll be in a situation where like your game plan wants you to like is okay with growing a little bit later and just like doing efficient stuff. And that's something I have notes on below. And in that case, you'll get a bit more value at a Small Scale Farmer. But my typical expectation for it is like 4 wood if I play it in the first round.
Right. Which instantly makes it 1 wood worse than Wood Collector.
Yeah. Let's see. Another card here is Woodcutter. This is the one that gives you 1 extra wood every time you take a wood accumulation space. Woodcutter is also a card that I think I'm relatively similar on Woodcutter and Small Scale Farmer in terms of what I expect to get out of them.
Yeah.
But I think that Woodcutter has higher upside because there are games where I'll just continue taking wood for a really long time, whereas Small Scale Farmer definitely is going to be turned off at some point.
It's one of those cards that feels bad to play early, but you are always glad you played it in the mid game, I feel like, especially if it's a tight game and there's like a lot of the two piles turning into 3 piles for you becomes significant.
It definitely does. And Woodcutter also does the same thing we were just kind of talking about with Woodcart, where it kind of allows you to bully the wood piles.
Oh, I love anytime I grab Woodcart, I'm grabbing Woodcutter if I see it, because turning ones into fours is like just the most fun thing in the world. And then you're just big wood bully. I'll take wood stacks. That is the only time when I will take wood stacks just to have wood. I don't even know if I'm going to need it. I
like that might be the only time you can get like 70 wood and then have some left over.
Yeah, no, it's great.
But yeah, Woodcutter, like I was in a game recently where my strategy, I think I actually still won this game, but like my strategy was, or no, I think I came in second because this person, basically there's a person who just like played Woodcutter and then they just took every single wood pile.
Right.
And I was like trying to, you know, get something set up and also gather room parts. And I just couldn't get my room parts in time because all the wood was gone. So Woodcutter, I think, has that upside for it, which makes it, in my opinion, better than Small Scale Farmer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Next up is Wood Expert. Wood Expert is a little bit less like Small Scale Farmer, a little bit less directly comparable because it gives you 2 wood immediately and then lets you spend 1 food to replace the wood cost in any minors or any improvements you play. Also could be majors. And not the entire wood cost, just up to 2 wood. But that's usually most of the wood cost.
Yep.
So Wood Expert saves you wood in another way, and it costs food. I think they're less directly comparable, but I still think I'm on Wood Expert over Small Scale Farmer because it gives you the wood fast, the 2 wood you need, and sometimes that's important. It really depends on how many wood-costing miners you have, because if you don't have any, it's just not going to really matter at all for you. But if you have a lot, it could save you a ton of wood.
I also
it does cost food, but
I also don't
food
mind
is generally easier
like,
to get than wood.
High rolling with it too, and taking it, you know, in a second pack if there's nothing else, great, because it then incentivizes me to take, you know, 1 wood miners that become free. I think double in value, if not triple, sometimes, you know.
But yeah, like, and 2 wood miners are the same as well, because
2 wood miners are often impossible to play.
Yeah, because two wood like any miner that has 2 wood and has a point printed on it suddenly becomes good.
Yep.
Whereas b- before, those cards are usually bad because like you can get two wood to a point in the form of a stable anyway, so you don't need that on a card.
Right.
So yeah, so Wood Expert turns that into a much better card. And for that reason, you'll end up with a lot of better late picks a lot of the time. So
yeah,
Wood Expert.
It's a fun card to play too. It makes the draft fun because all of a sudden you're looking at miners you would usually ignore.
Yeah, and so I think it's kind of, it might seem a little bit weaker than Small Scale Farmer at first because it only gives you two wood and you don't know how much you're going to spend on miners. But I think almost always Wood Expert ends up saving you more wood and getting that wood more quickly.
Agreed.
All right. Wood Barterer is next. This card is just like, I think, one of like the top five occupations in the set.
It might be my favorite card. Just, I mean, I don't even, not that it's the most powerful, but I think it's my favorite card to have.
Yeah.
It's the card that makes me feel the safest.
Yeah, I agree. Wood Barterer is so flexible. It's the card that gives you either when you take a farm redevelopment, you know, the place where you can build rooms, or you build or the build fences action or the rend fence action, you can either gain two wood or turn up to two wood into reed at the start of that action.
Yeah, you can take a solid fence action on five wood.
Yes. Yeah. it's just so flexible. Like, it's not even really worth comparing to Small Scale Farmer because it's, I mean, it's just clearly one of the best cards in the set. So we almost don't need to talk about it here, but just
it threatens Wood Barterer, so much. It's just, once it's on the table, people have to worry, are you going to fence and steal animals? Are you going to build? You know, I mean, I just feel it threatens everything.
Yeah. And it's like, you usually don't want to be turning wood into reed, but like having the ability to do so just makes you so much more flexible in what resources you can grab.
Yeah. Oh, and if you combine this with like Brushwood Collector or something like that, then it's like you're very happy.
All right. How about House Steward and Constable? These are both cards that give you a bunch of wood if you play them early and have some game end scoring effect. So House Steward is, I don't remember the exact breakdown on what rounds it does, but I know that if you play it in like the first four rounds, it'll give you four wood. Yeah. Same with Constable.
I mean,
and then that amount goes down throughout the game.
Four wood is no joke, especially if you're, you know, have a childless in your hand, you know, especially if it's your first awk and it's, you know, zero food for four wood, you know, you then have to a little bit tailor your strategy to, you know, I mean, Constable is less worrisome to me than House Steward. Just because I know basically how many rooms I'm going to build based on my hand. And if it's not five, then I know I'm giving 3 points to somebody.
Yeah.
Whereas Constable, I can pretty much, if I want that, I can get it regardless of my cards usually.
Yeah. So either one of those, if you play it, they're giving you a game end scoring condition. House Steward is the one where sometimes I'll just play it for the four wood and be okay with somebody else getting 3 points for having the most rooms.
Yeah, unless you king make, then it feels bad.
Yeah, but like if you're playing it that early, then everyone knows about it and can kind of play around it to some extent. But like most of the time, like you said, your number of houses is more determined by how many by the cards you drafted than it is by seeing a House Steward all of a sudden. Yeah. Constable, on the other hand, though, like you said, that just gives a bonus 3 points to anyone who has no negative points. The only time you can't really avoid that is if you have something in your hand that you need to play that is going to give you negative points, like Begging Student.
It feels so good to play it right after somebody plays a Begging Student.
I mean, it does, but then you're still playing against Begging Student, so it still feels bad.
It balances the playing field somewhat.
Somewhat. Yeah, so I think, and like we said, Small Scale Farmer, we're expecting it to give you about four wood, and those cards just give you four wood straight up, so I think they're better. Yeah. They just give you the wood faster.
They're also, like, I've seen them played late really well as, you know, as surprise cards.
Yeah, they are flexible.
And that, you know, one or two wood you get in the last round can often be a staple. It's not a bad move.
Yeah, that's true. All right, two more here that are a little bit less directly comparable because they give you wood when they require you to do something else. And these are Firewood Collector and Cultivator. Firewood Collector gives you wood on a bunch of different spaces, grain utilization, farmland, I forget.
And you don't even get it right away, right? It's end of the round.
Is it? Oh, I honestly...
I think it is.
I don't play with... I barely ever play
with
this card. I
think it's if you have gone to one of those places at the end of the round, get a wood.
I see. Okay, yeah. Well, so I that shows that I barely even know what this card does because I'm pretty low on it. I think there are times when you're okay with it. However, I think in the time where you most want this card is also the time when you most want small scale farmer, which is when you're playing big country. Because
right, right.
In a big country strategy, you're plowing like every turn. Right. So Firewood Collector will actually be a lot of wood for you.
In which case, though, you really wish it was the next card we'll talk about.
But also in that case, you really wish it was small scale farmer.
Yeah.
Because
right.
that's the time you're on two room woodhouse forever. So I think Firewood Collector is the first of the wood gathering cards that I would rate lower than small scale farmer.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Yeah. I think so too.
Cultivator now. Cultivator's very strong.
Cultivator's up there with Wood Barter.
So Cultivator is every time you plow a field, you get a wood and a food.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're probably plowing like four or five fields in the game, right? So that's four or five wooden and food.
And it's also one of the cards that decides the rest of your draft often as well. Like it really, yeah. now you are going either vegetable or wheat. Now it really sort of like defines your game in a lot of ways.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it is that powerful just to be getting that trickle of wood and food early, you know, and it's an uncontested spot stage one, unless you're playing against a big country.
Yeah. And there's so many times when it's just really nice to, you might need like one more wood and it's nice to get a field with that wood. Yeah. Like it often feels like,
you get your fifth
wood, this allows me to take a one wood spot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And a food and a plow. Yeah. It's not bad.
Yeah. It's like the food and the plow are incidental.
Yeah.
But like you're always happy to have them.
Absolutely.
It's interesting to talk about Cultivator versus small scale farmer with big country, I think.
Yeah.
I think I'm on Cultivator here because.
Oh, yeah.
Mostly what it gives you is just one more food than small scale farmer, if we're assuming you're plowing every round in the early game. But small scale farmer has a longer tail where it's going to continue to give you wood, most likely.
Yeah, it's going to guarantee you joinery. It's going to guarantee you four stables. You know, it's going to... we'll get into that when we get into big country. But yeah.
I think they're really close in the big country situation,
yeah.
But otherwise cultivators I'm taking higher.
Yeah.
Before we get into the specific combos and stuff, let's talk about when you expect to see small scale farmer in a draft, just like in general versus all the other cards. I don't have any hard data on this, but what would you expect is the small scale farmer's like average draft position?
You know, I think it's one of those noob trap cards a bit. I think it's a card that newer players see and overvalue. So I
certainly did when I first started
playing. Absolutely. Yeah. You're just like, oh, free wood. Oh, I start in two. Oh, well, I'm going to be in two for a long time because it's hard to grow and build. So it depends. The higher the skill level, the later it goes. But, you know, I mean, if I have a big country in my opening pack, I'm not going to choose it because I know most likely it will wheel. You know, at least, I mean, it depends. I mean, if there's nothing else, but I often think like if I see big country and small scale in the same pack, if there's really other, you know, I'd rather let it wheel than pass a childless or something. You know?
That's interesting. I feel like almost always if I see big country and small scale, I'm just snapping both because I'm too afraid of it not coming back because it is so good.
But also I know nobody's seen big country, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. Sometimes it's a fun gamble. I mean, I as well. I mean, unless there's, it depends what, if there's a, you know, a begging student or something, you know, obviously I'll let it wheel.
Yeah.
But you know, it depends what I'm passing as well. Like I don't want to pass, you know, a tiller or you know, certain things like that. Cause I'm very, you know, I will lose to a big day laborer combo, you know?
Yeah. I guess if I'm getting like something else that's generally considered very good and like I'm not losing that much of a small scale farmer, like maybe I'd take like a, I don't know, one of those other wood cards like Wood Expert or something, and because I wouldn't expect Wood Expert to wheel, but I would expect small scale farmer, so even though small scale farmer is better in that situation, I would probably still take the Wood Expert first, or not Wood Expert, which one, Wood Collector, the one that gives you a trickle of wood.
Also, like if I had a Constable in that same pack, I might take the Constable and see if the small scale wheels. I mean, Constable is just such a quick four wood, and I'm guaranteed and a guaranteed 3 points for a big
Constable's
country.
A bit more flexible in the early game for big country as well, which is nice.
Yeah, but yeah, typically I if there's not a big country in the game, I would expect it to go mid to late. I guess mid, not late.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. And then the other question I have here is, how often do you play
it?
For me, I a lot of the time will end up with small scale farmer as a late pick because, you know, it's often the best card in the pack once it wheels. And so I'll just end up with one. But a lot of the time I don't even play it. Like a lot of the time I just take like a three wood grab in the first stage over it.
Yeah, it's often hard to be like, there's no way that this is better than 3 wood right now.
Yeah, and it's like, this will probably be one more wood than that 3 wood grab, right. But it's an occupation, so it costs me a food. Even if like the first one I play doesn't cost me a food, you know, it will cost me a food down the line when I play something else, so.
And I mean, it depends if, you know, what, you know, if it goes awk, RSF, wood, and you're fourth, sure, I'll play it on that. You know, I'll spend one food and play it there for sure.
Definitely. If I'm fourth seat, I actually think I like this card more.
Yeah.
I'm not as like a game plan by any means, but just like it's a good early occupation, and I want good early occupations when I'm in the fourth seat because I want to be able to do whatever's given to me.
Are you playing it in round two? Because that, also the fourth seat can be dangerous because often, you know, both ox will be gone.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm happy to have it in fourth seat, even if I never get to play it. Because if both ox are gone in the first round, then I'll just take whatever else is there. Yeah. If I have other early ox, then I don't really want it in fourth seat because I'd rather get those out first. But like, if I have no early ox, that's a very bad position to be in the fourth seat, because that means that if ox comes to you, you're not going to be able to use it. So
yeah, it is a good contingency plan if ox comes around to you. And, you know, then you're happy. Then there's almost no bad action round one for you as long as you drafted it. That's true.
So I think something that I've noticed about my gameplay versus some others is that I'm very okay with drafting a card without expecting to play it, but just like having it there for that one situation where I would want to play it.
Right.
Because a lot of the things you do in Agricola are just like you want to be affecting stuff on the board. You don't need to set up good card combos as long as you're doing good stuff on the board.
Yep.
So a lot of the time I do draft a card like this where it's just like, if I end up in this one exact situation, this is my out. And otherwise, it's just going to sit in my hand and I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah, that's one of the main things I'm working on in my game right now is like I definitely am. I get a little too excited about my cards, and I'm definitely learning that like, no. Like, even if you feel like you drew the God hand, you will lose if you don't play the board. And that has been an important lesson. I've been on a epic losing streak in the last week, like just absolutely epic, but it's been good. It actually feels like a positive because it's sort of that bell curve thing. Like I really only started getting into Agricola about 2 months ago, and I played it over the last 10. I mean, I've played it the first time 13 years ago. And I've probably played it 20 times in the last 13 years, but only 2 months ago did I really decide like, no, I love this game. And now that it's on BGA and now that there's a big enough card pool, I'm going to really take it seriously. And so, you know.
Yeah, I'm kind of similar, actually, because I mostly played two player before I started playing on BGA.
Yeah.
Just like with my brother. And I think like he and I are both good game players and we played at a pretty high level for a two player game.
Yeah.
But two player Agricola isn't like, it's just a very different game.
It's
from
an extremely different game. Yeah, it's a great game, but it is an extremely different game.
Yeah. So like, I think I felt like I learned like, how to think about Agricola a little bit from those games, but then like only recently have I actually started really learning like the dynamics of a four-player game.
Yeah, and I've sort of had that classic, you know, learning curve of like really, really bad and then like huge jump in growth and like, oh, my game, I'm so good, and then just slammed down to the ground once I've reached the point of like, oh, I can destroy all the noobs and now I'm in with real players and I'm dead. Like, so I've just had an epic losing streak in the last week where it's just like I've only been up against like high ranked players and I'm just getting destroyed. But it's been really it really shows you where your weak points are, and I've definitely realized that like I overvalue my cards, and it's, you know, I have to play the board and I have to play the other player's hands as well.
Yeah, keeping in mind what's in the draft, that's something that I felt like I've gotten a lot better at recently. Like, I had a game recently where I passed a rammed clay.
Yep.
So I was like, clay is going to be contested this game. And then I just spent the rest, and I had enough, like, good things to do with clay. So I just spent the rest of the game, every time there was four clay on the board, I just grabbed it.
Sure.
And I won that game easily because my opponents really wanted clay and they couldn't get it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, that's smart.
All right, let's talk about combos with Small Scale Farmer. The big one is Big Country.
Yeah.
Big Country, when you play it, you can only play it if your farmyard is completely filled. Every space is accounted for. And it gives you 1 point and 2 food for every complete round left to play.
Yeah.
This card, as you noted, is likely going to be banned for the next season of Arena on Agricola.
I hope it is.
Board Game Arena.
I can't decide if I'm more bored of playing it or playing against it. I don't enjoy either.
I find it a little bit fun to play because I'm still trying to figure out how to play it well. I feel like it's actually kind of difficult to play it well, but...
Yeah, okay. I'll give you that. I might just be okay at playing it normally, and that to me feels boring, and maybe there's another... Okay, I finished a game this morning. I'm gonna tell you the cards I played. It's funny that we're doing this because I literally... I'm going to tell you the cards that I played in this game. Okay. First card up was Small Scale Farmer. Okay. Second card nice. Was Big Country. Then I played a pastor. Then I played Sack Cart for my grain. Then I played a manger. A 3-point manger. Then I played Scholar.
Those are all Big Country cards.
After Scholar, I played Manservant. Then I played Bottles. Then I played Beanfield. Then I played Clearing Spade. And this was a game with Game Brain listeners, and they forgot to check the banned card thing. And my last card was Braggart.
Nice.
And by the way, that's a 58-point game, and I lost to Infinite Jester with a 63. So
yeah, I mean, that's kind of the Big Country problem. if your opponents just do good stuff, you're like not contesting the board.
But it's not often that a 58 comes in second.
No, not often, but it does happen. Yeah. But yeah, Big Country, super broken card, and Small Scale Farmer is quite possibly the best. Like, it's very close to the best occupation you can have.
Well, it's a 14 wood occupation.
Well, 13.
That's right, 13 wood. It's a 13 wood occupation. That's... you know, most of your fences, although you will get some wood grab. I mean, it basically means you never have to, you only really need to take wood a couple times in the game, maybe, you know? And some of those can just be, you know, screw yous to the board. They can just be wood police.
I think something, you still, I think, should be taking a lot of wood. Because the easiest way to lose with Big Country is if your opponents get enough wood.
Right, because you are not playing the board as much, and because you don't have the action efficiency that everybody else has.
And since, as we were saying, the wood almost never goes down in value, I think even with Small Scale Farmer giving you a ton of wood, you still need to prioritize wood really highly with Big Country. You can't let your opponents get it until later in the game.
Right. And Big Country's biggest weakness also is luck. Where Wish for Children comes and where Urgent Wish comes. Like in the game where I scored a 58, Wish came in the middle of the round and Urgent came last.
Yeah, that's rough.
So
you would have just won if that Urgent came one round sooner.
100%. That's actually correct. Yeah, 100%. That would have been another 3 to 6 points. And if Wish had come one round later, I think I definitely win. So that's part... Big Country, you are... You know, the wins don't feel good and the losses don't feel good because if you won, it's because you got lucky. And if you lost, it's because you got unlucky. often, not always. There's still a skill ceiling, but for the most part.
So we don't need to talk about that much more. Hopefully it's just banned soon.
Yeah. But
let's talk about
what is it going to do to Small Scale then? Will Small Scale even
Pick? I think it'll be still a late pick because, again, that flexibility I was talking about. It's so nice to have an early awk if you don't already have one. And so I still think it's going to be a decent pick late game. And you're more likely to get it late game once Big Country's gone. Because one of the nice things about Small Scale Farmer right now is it's kind of like a Big Country detector. Mm-hmm. If you pass it and it comes back to you, no one has Big Country.
That's funny. That's very true. You're right. That's smart. Yeah. I don't know if it's going to be next round, but the rumor is that they're putting in some of the artifacts cards.
That'll be nice.
And I've looked through them, but I'm not quite sure what those are going to do to the two room strategy. If they boost the two room strategy in any way, or you know, what the real issue is with two room strategy is that we have no Reno cards or very few Reno cards.
I do think there's another card currently in the set that makes me want to take Small Scale Farmer a lot more highly, and that is Collector.
Yeah.
Collector is the card where every time you... It's an action space that you can play on. And every time you play on it, you take a begging marker, so -3 points, but you get to take 6 goods of your choice, 6 different goods. And then the second time, you get to take 7, then 8, then 9.
Yeah.
This is a card that looks terrible, I think, to most people who are new to the game, but is actually very strong, very, very strong.
And I think there's a streamer, Econ Sean, who's had a bunch of, I think, very... influential two-room collector games that I think has sort of shifted the meta.
I've definitely learned how to play Collector from Econ Sean.
Yeah, I mean, I think people weren't really looking at it as an early card. They were looking at it as, well, this is just the way I get my animals and my my crops. And he had a couple big win games against real opponents where he played it early and kind of dominated in a way that, you know, and took three beggars off of it, which I think was the nobody was even playing it ever past two. That, you know, I mean, of course people were, but, you know, at least the streamers often weren't.
Yeah, because getting two uses of Collector makes a lot of sense, because it gets you all of your breeding animal pairs and it gets you all of your crops for max crop points, minus 1 point on grain.
Yeah, if you do the math, I think it's a guaranteed 4 point play.
So it's just like, it's enough points to be worth the beggars.
Yeah, it's guaranteed netting 4 points.
The third play of it is more dubious, because you're not getting any extra like breeding points. You're not getting any extra crop points for the most part.
Right.
But turns out still often very good, because it can either give you huge food tempo or just like the little bit of extra building parts that you need.
Reed and stone.
Stuff like that.
Reed and stone are no joke.
Yeah. So Collector is a surprisingly powerful occupation. I rate it very highly. And I think it makes small scale farmer better, because you can do two room stuff. Also, just like in a Collector game, if I have Collector, I'm often okay just waiting and being late in the growth queue, because Collector gives me a really efficient action early on. Yeah. So it's like I can just take the most efficient stuff off the board, fence early, which is what small scale farmer is really good for, and then collect and just let room, let growth happen when it happens. Like, you still have to, you know, build a room and grow, but just like fall into the queue rather than fighting to be at the top of it.
And Collector also juices the board, which you can often take advantage of as well.
That is true, yeah. And in that case, maybe you want to grow a little bit faster to be able to do that. But I don't know, I still just find it such an efficient action that...
It's a very high skill card that I am just starting to not be terrified of. It's a noob terror card. Like, you know, when you're learning the game and you see that, you're like, oh, I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
All I know is don't take beggars, you know, unless it's a begging student, then I get why that's good. But yeah, I'm starting to be less terrified of the Collector.
Let's see, the other cards, other combos, anything that gives you a sign that you want to be in a two-room house for a long time, although I literally can't think of anything other than those two, and other than Caravan, which is, of course, already banned on BGA, but Caravan's the card that's just broken in so many ways.
Yeah, that's the one where you just have your card is a room.
Yeah.
So you don't have to build, you have to play that card and then win the growth.
All right, so lastly, I think we've already covered most of the things in this last section here, so we can just skip through it. But one thing I really want to stress is do not delay growth because you have small-scale farmer.
So that
never worth it.
That's the same rule for childless.
Yeah.
Yeah. Grow when you can.
Another thing to think about is wood injection. It does add wood to the game. You got to keep in mind that adds wood for everyone, not just you.
Yep.
So if you see someone else playing it, even, you know that there's going to be more wood in the game in general if you play it. You might want to take wood still as highly as you normally would just to police the table. And if you see it with other wood injectors, you can think about getting things like the joinery, because like there's just going to be extra wood in the game.
Yeah. You're almost guaranteed to get your staples out too. And I did find in a couple games I've played with Big Country Wood Collector that you have to decide if you're going cows or pigs. And then you also have to decide if you're going 10 space, or if you're going, you know, 5 fields or 4 fields, and then how you're going to arrange. I mean, obviously it's nicer to go 5 fields if you can, but that's really hard to do if you don't have, you know, a cultivator or a plowman or something that's helping you out with that. But yeah, I don't know. I found stable placement to be an interesting thing in terms of which animals I'm taking. And if you're doing the, you know, the 6 space, 3 space, then, you know, it's usually obviously better to go sheep and, well, your real choice is, are you going pigs or cows? And it's usually better to go pigs, in which case the stables never really matter that much, but they can a little bit with the sheep, because you can end up with 12 or 13 sheep if sheep come early and you've gone Big Country.
Yeah, hopefully you have a loom or something.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
All right, I think that about wraps us up for playing with the small scale farmer. Let's move into section 2 of the podcast here, as we always have, which is bluffing that you have the small-scale farmer. This is, of course, a very important part of Agricola strategy, is bluffing. First of all, let's go over like the most general bluffing strategy with an occupation like this. And this works really well in a board game arena, is you just play onto the occupation spot. Well, if you're on Board Game Arena, you just play on the occupation spot, wait for a little bit, and then undo your play.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's bluffing that you could have a lot of different occupations. If you're in person, this works even better because you play there, and you say, I'm going to play my small scale. Well, no, actually, I'm going to play something else, and then you play something else.
Uh-huh.
It'll get them every time. They'll think you have a small-scaled farmer guaranteed.
This is the blood on the clock tower part of you coming out.
It's a huge part of the game of Agricola. All the high-level players are constantly talking about this stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I do always like when some of the streamers, you know, note the, like, the fake awk or flashing a card you're not going to play. It's always fun.
Other bluffing tip with small scale farmer is people are afraid of big country.
Yeah.
So like if your game plan has you play in a way that looks like you have big country, then this can work even better. Like, you know, if you take wood, then plow, and then the next stage you open awk, and then you take it back. People are going to think, like, oh, the only reason you would be awking there is with some kind of wood injection or something. So
I'm not sure how that helps you, though. Is that you're going to make someone take an inefficient early plow just to slow you down so you get a better wood grip?
No. You could get that, or you could get them prioritizing occupation more highly than they should because they want to block, because they think you've got an awk you want to play, and they're going to try to block you on that.
Right. So you go there, make them think that you think it's going to wheel, and then they play an awk they weren't really going to, and then you get the RSF. Or whatever, yeah. That's funny.
All right, I think that does it for the second section. Let's move on to section three, which is judging rules edge cases for the small-scale farmer. Also a very important part of the podcast. So, the big one with small-scale farmer is cards that provide room for a person do not count for small-scale farmer, so you can play those and small-scale farmer.
All right, so caravan's fine.
Caravan's fine.
Okay. Good to know.
All right. I think that about does it for what is this podcast called? Association of the Agriculturalists.
I love it. Everybody go out and play small scale farmer today while you can.
Yeah. Yeah. Before it takes over the meta after this episode.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thank you, Maddie, for being on the show. I think you wanted to talk about some other game for a moment here, Blood on the Clock Tower?
Yeah, well, I sort of want you, if you don't mind, to I've already pre-ordered the game. I kickstarted it like everybody else in the year of our Lord 1964. And I have not really thought about it. I have this magic ability where I can kickstart things and then never think about them again, which I'm really glad, because otherwise I would just like probably be one of those people raging in the comment section, like yelling at people for a pandemic they didn't cause that making their game years late. But I would like you to explain to me, you know, the kind of games I like after listening to the podcast and playing with me.
Yeah.
Will I like Blood on the Clock Tower? And if not, or if so, why?
I think you will.
You know, I hate not Avalon. 100...
Yeah. You hate Avalon, but you like Battlestar Galactica, right?
Love it.
I mean, okay, I'm not super confident in this, but I think you'll like it. Hating Avalon is like a big strike against it, definitely.
Well, but the reasons I hate Avalon are because...
It's because your group is, like, tyrannical about it.
Our group min-maxes it, and there's very little story element to it. So, and it also... I'm always excited to play a board game, and I feel like it just sucks 30 minutes out of my night.
Yeah, I think you'll like it then, because the really nice thing about Blood on the Clock Tower is that it's resilient to oppressive metas in a way that I haven't seen any other social deduction game be.
That's a big pro.
Yeah, because you have a storyteller who's making active decisions, and it's dependent on the storyteller as well, because if you have a bad storyteller, then they're not going to do this right, and you can end up with just unfun games. But with a storyteller who's really like on the ball and knows what they're doing, when they see a meta developing, they will set up the game to counter that meta.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it so that every game you have to be actively making plays that are like adaptive to the situation, and nobody can really tell you that there's a right or wrong way to do something, because the storyteller... Like, the storyteller doesn't have, like, absolute control over the game or anything, but they have enough control that they can tip the scales however needed so that if some kind of bad play pattern is developing, they can make it so that that is actually a bad thing to be doing. When I say bad, I mean an unfun play pattern.
Where does Blood on the Clock Tower fit into a game night? Is this the main course, right?
For instance, in about an hour, I'm going to be going to a game playing session where we're going to be playing exclusively Blood on the Clock Tower for like 3 hours.
Oh, wow. And how many games will you get in 3 hours? One, two?
I would say three or four, actually.
Oh, that's exciting. Okay.
We might go a little bit longer. When you first start playing, games will take a little while, usually.
Yeah.
But the more experienced you are as a storyteller, I've found the faster you play games, typically.
Are you exclusively the storyteller?
There's me and there's a couple other people in the group who do it. I'm usually storytelling, but...
Do you enjoy not being the storyteller?
Oh, yeah. I love both, definitely. Being the storyteller is really fun, but being a player is also very fun. Yeah, no, it's a good time.
what's the learning curve on being a storyteller? How difficult or how flexible is it to, you know, other members of the group, or is it like it's really just going to be the person who owns the game who knows it best?
I think it's anybody can do it, especially for the base set. You do have to do like a little bit of homework. Like, there's an almanac for each of the editions, and it's really a good idea to read the almanac before you start storytelling.
Right.
It gives you more context and like advice and stuff about how to run the characters beyond just their ability text. But as long as you read the almanac, I think anybody can storytell for the base edition of Trouble Brewing. The edition is also just in itself resilient enough. Like it's the beginner set for a reason, not because it's like not fun to play for advanced players. It still is very fun when you're an advanced player, but it's just very resilient to anything the storyteller does. It's hard to mess it up.
Right. All right, last question. Part of my excitement for buying this was that I'm always trying to find fun experiences to have with non-gamers. For example, my wife and her friends often come over and they often hear that I'm into board games and they're so excited to play something. And then I pull something out and they're like, oh no, this isn't what we meant. we want something fun. Is Blood on the Clock Tower a game that I can bring out with non-gamers that will be a good experience for them?
Yes, very much so. And again, this comes down to being a good storyteller, but the key is not explaining too much of the game. New players will be over, like there's a ton in the game. That is this is part of why I like it so much. The game is like very simple if you present it the right way.
Right.
It's very easy to present it wrong and have it just be completely overwhelming for a new player because there's so many interlocking rules. But the rules all come out of the character abilities. So it's not like the base rules of the game are very simple. The game comes with a little script that you can read, a one-page script that just introduces the game in about 4 to 5 minutes.
Right.
And that's all you need to get someone started. I've basically at this point memorized that and like adjusted it a little bit to what I've found works best. But I can onboard a new player and have them playing the game in 5 minutes and they won't be overwhelmed.
All right. Typically. Well, I'm sufficiently hyped. All right. Actual last question. What is the minimum amount of players required for a fun experience?
With experienced players, the minimum number is 6. With new players, you're going to want to have at least 8. Okay. Because that's one storyteller plus 7 players, which is when you kind of get to the normal game.
Right.
With more experienced players, it's still fun to do stuff like Teensyvilles, which are the smaller scripts for a lower player count. But those are a little bit more janky, and they're generally more fun if everyone's already played before, because it's just like, it's not the core experience, but it's still fun, but you kind of have to know what you're getting into.
All right. Well, that's very exciting, because eight to 10 is usually our game nights, so that's perfect.
Yeah. In general, I think the best player count's around 13 because one storyteller plus 12 players.
Right, right.
But most of the games I play are more in the 8 to 10 range, so it's still totally fine.
All right. You sold me on a game I already bought.
That's good. It's just I'm just saving your feelings here.
Exactly. That's awesome. Cool. Well, thank you, man. This was a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate it. I'm a big fan of Game Brain. I got into Game Brain, as I mentioned to you, because of the Blood on the Clock Tower episode. I don't think you were on that. You said you haven't actually played the game, so.
No, I think it was Jesse and Tom, right? Yeah, Jesse's a big fan of it, and I know he actually like made a PNP copy and was playing it quite a bit.
Yeah, that's what I've also made a few of my own copies. but yeah, that's how I discovered Game Brain, was after that episode.
Awesome.
I loved the podcast ever since then.
Oh, thank you.
So yeah, everyone, if you don't know Game Brain, you should go listen to it. It's a great podcast.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Thanks so much for being on the show. And everyone else, you'll hear from me whenever the next episode comes out of Association of the Agriculturalists, your favorite Agricola podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, and bye, everybody.